Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's the end of April.
Oh,
Yeah.
it's almost my favorite month.
It's gonna be
It's
May.
gonna be May.
April's a pretty good, I think. I don't know. I do like April. It's like the start of spring. It's Fuji's birthday.
Oh,
It's Earth Day.
Earth Day.
It's my anniversary. So,
April's good.
yeah. And April,
Snow May. What?
April's like a nice name for a person. May's a
It
good name
is.
for a person too.
This is my daughter, April May.
Oh my God. But spell it MAE.
Yeah. APRYLMAE. April May.
God, how millennial of you. You should get your next bunny has got to be April May.
Oh, love that.
Oh, I do too. Okay, that's gonna be the title of this episode if we don't come up with something funnier.
Okay.
That's such a weird way to spell April.
Yeah,
All right, well, I guess we can like dive right in.
okay.
We all know why we're here. Happy Fearsome and Fridays. Happy end of the month. We are on Holy Gossip Girls. I'm Casey.
I'm Faye.
What are you drinking?
Water.
Me too. I just
Nice.
heard my baby screaming.
Cheers
Ugh.
it. Oh my God, I should not have worn a long sleeve dress today.
In my sunroom, basically. Yeah. It's fucking hot. It's like 83 today.
It was nice, but like nice when you have air.
Yeah. It gets so hot in this room.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? All
Yeah.
right, so welcome back. We're on week three of this horrible discussion, but
Oh,
honestly, the worst is behind us.
good.
This episode is like,
Catching the bastard.
yeah, and like the investigation. So, all the bad shit, that
In the
was last week.
past,
Yeah.
it's behind us.
Forget about it. Don't forget too much, but like, you don't need
Don't think about
to. Yeah, just stop thinking about the dishes, man. Stop thinking about
I never will.
them. It's gonna haunt me forever. All right, so last week we started our discussion of Joseph James D'Angelo, who is an American serial killer, sex offender, burglar, and former police officer who committed at least 13 murders, 51 rapes, and 120 burglaries across California between 1978 and 1986. We
Was
cover.
sorry, wasn't he a police officer for like 4 minutes?
Yeah.
I like how he's still former police officer.
That's like what people focus on. They're like,
This cop.
this ex-cop was a fucking rapist? Shocker.
Anyway, sorry.
So surprised. Yeah. We covered his crimes in as the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker in last week's episode. Let's finally finish off this story.
All right.
So, this next section is called Communications. So there was like a lot of communications that could or could not have been from Joseph James D'Angelo to investigators. Some of them could have been red herrings, but they are pretty interesting. There was a poem.
Oh.
It was called Excitement's Crave. In December 1977, someone claiming to be the East Area Rapist sent a poem to the Sacramento Bee, the Sacramento mayor's office, and television station KVIE. On December 11th, a masked man eluded pursuit by law enforcement personnel after alerting authorities by telephone that he would strike on Watt Avenue that night. So, I have the poem here. It's quite long. Do you want it? Should I read it all?
How long is it?
Like from here to here.
Yeah, you can read it if you want. I bet it sucks.
All right. Excitement's crave. Sorry, not cave. Ugh. Jesus. Excitement's crave. All those mortals surviving birth upon facing maturity take inventory of their worth to prevailing society. Choosing values becomes a task. Oneself must seek satisfaction. The selected route will unmask character when plans take action. Accepting some work to perform at fixed pay but promised for more is a recognized social norm, as is decorum seeking lore. Achieving while others lifting should be cause for deserving fame. Leisure tempts excitement's seeking. What's right and expected seems tame. Jesse James has been seen by all, and Son of Sam has an author. Others now feel temptation's call. Sacramento should make an offer. To make a movie of my life that will pay for my planned exile, just now I'd like to add the wife of a mafia lord to my file. Your East Area rapist and deserving pest. See you in the press or on TV.
That sucks.
I do like the part that's like, I'd like to make a mafia lord one of my victims.
Yeah.
Mafia lord's wife.
That kind of is cool, but the rest sucks.
So that was fun. This next one, I don't know. It's called Homework Pages and Punishment Map, December 9th, 1978. During the investigation in Danville on the 42nd attack, I believe of the East Area rapist, investigators discovered three sheets of notebook paper near where a suspicious vehicle had reportedly been parked. Okay. It's all like, there's no proof, right?
Yeah.
Nothing connecting him so far. They believed the pages were dropped accidentally, perhaps by falling out of a bag. The first sheet appears to be a homework essay on General George Armstrong Custer. And on Wikipedia, like, they literally list every single word that's on these essays.
Really?
I did not put all that in here. The second sheet contains a journal-style entry describing a teacher who made students write lines, which the author found humiliating. On the last sheet was a hand-drawn map of what appears to be a suburban neighborhood with the words punishment scrolled across the reverse side. Investigators were unable to identify the area depicted in the map, although the artist clearly had knowledge of architectural layout and landscaping design. According to Detective Larry Poole, the map is a fantasy location representing the rapist's desired striking ground.
Weird.
Here are some pictures.
Oh. I mean,
it's not even a map of a place that exists.
Yeah.
Dropped near a car that wasn't his. And like, why would some adult man have an essay in his backpack?
Yeah.
About Armstrong Custer? I say this makes
baloney.
No sense. Yeah. I say you're grasping at straws. All right. These next ones, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The poem, I don't think was him, but it's fun.
Yeah.
The homework one, I think that's nothing. The phone calls, I think could be him because he was a fucking psycho.
Yeah. And
would call his victims.
He did love to call.
Yeah. Like before and after. Psycho. So. All right. This first phone call is called I'm the East Side Rapist on March 18th, 1977. On March 18th, 1977, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office received three calls from a man claiming to be the East Area Rapist. None were recorded. I don't know why, because maybe it was too early to just like automatically record phone calls.
Yeah.
The first two calls received at 4:15 and 4:30 p.m. were identical and ended with the caller laughing and hanging up. The final call came at 5 p.m. with the caller saying, quote, I'm the East Side Rapist and I have my next victim already stalked and you guys can't catch me.
What a little child. You guys
can't catch me. The next call came December 2nd. A man claiming to be the rapist called the Sacramento Police Department saying, quote, you're never going to catch me, East Area Rapist, you dumb fuckers. I'm going to fuck again tonight. Be careful. The call was recorded and later released. As with the previous call, the next victim was attacked that night.
Aww.
Which is so scary. This one was on December 9th. During the 1977 Christmas season, a previous victim received a phone call that she attributed to her attacker. So this was from a victim. The caller said, Merry Christmas. It's me again.
Oh my God.
Like, how horrifying.
That's really scary.
All right. On December 10th. The next day, shortly before 10 p.m. on December 10th, 1977, Sacramento authorities received two identical calls saying, quote, I am going to hit tonight, Watt Avenue. Both were recorded and the caller was identified as the same person who placed the call on December 2nd. I guess they had similar voices because I don't think they could trace calls back then.
Yeah.
Law enforcement patrols were increased that night, and at 2:30 a.m., a masked man eluded officers after being seen bicycling on the Watt Avenue Bridge. When spotted again at 4:30 a.m., he discarded the bicycle and fled on foot.
They should have called this guy the bicycling loser or something. Don't give him a cool nickname.
On January 2nd, 1978, the first known rape victim received a wrong number call asking for Ray on January 2nd. The caller was recorded, and the police suspected that it may have been the same caller who made a threatening call to her later that evening. The call was also recorded and identified by the victim as the voice of her assailant. The caller said, gonna kill you, gonna kill you, gonna kill you.
Oh my God.
Bitch, 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 fucking whore.
Wow. What a child.
Happy New Year. That's so horrible. On January 6th, a man claiming to be the East Area Rapist called the Contact Counseling Service and said, quote, I have a problem. I need help because I don't want to do this anymore. After a short conversation, the caller said, quote, I believe you're tracing this call, and hung up.
Uh-oh.
Later calls from 1982 to 1991. In 1982, a previous victim received a call at her place of work. Horrifying.
Really?
A Denny's restaurant. During which the rapist threatened to rape her again. According to Contra Costa County investigator Paul Holes, who's like the man,
mm-hmm.
Paul Holes is the man. he's like the lead investigator of this case late in the case, which is how the East Area Rapist got caught. But anyway, he's awesome. He lives in Colorado.
Aw.
And he has a podcast.
Aw.
And
so do we. We have so much in common.
Me, us and Paul Holes were basically besties.
Colorado podcasters. We see him at the convention every year. The meeting. Oh, the club God. Meeting.
If I ever met him and I was like, I have a podcast too. He's so embarrassing. He's like a professional. He's also like attractive for like an older man. We love Paul Holes.
We stan.
Yeah, we're Paul Holes stans.
Yeah.
Anyway, the rapist must have chanced to patronize the restaurant and recognized his victim there. So like
scary.
So scary. In 1991, a previous victim received a phone call from the perpetrator and spoke with him for 1 minute. She could hear a woman and children in the background, leading to speculation that he had a family, which he did.
Sad.
The final call. On April 6, 2001, 1 day after an article in the Sacramento Bee linked the original Night Stalker to the East Area Rapist, a victim of the rapist received a call from him. He asked, so fucked up, quote, "Remember when we played?"
Ew.
Yeah. So, this next section is the investigation, finally. Before officially connecting the original Night Stalker to the East Area Rapist in 2001, some law enforcement officials, particularly from the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department, sought to link the Goleta cases as well. The links were primarily due to similarities in modus operandi. One of the already linked original Night Stalker double murders occurred in Ventura, 40 miles southeast of Goleta, and the remaining murders were committed in Orange County, an additional 90 miles southeast. In 2001, several rapes in the Contra Costa County, believed to have been committed by the East Area Rapist, were linked by DNA to the Smith, Harrington, Withoon, and Cruz murders. A decade later, so like in 2001, they linked that by DNA, but like they didn't know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, DNA wasn't what it was like now. So in 2001, and you can, I think they talk about this in the mini series, but I've also listened to like a million podcasts, so I don't know where I remember this from, but like DNA, there was like these two versions. You were either a secretor or a non-secretor.
Uh-huh.
Don't know what those mean. But like they could see that like this DNA from these rapes matched the DNA left at these murders because they were like the same in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. All right. A decade later, DNA evidence indicated that the Domingo Sanchez murders were also committed by the East Area Rapist, also identified as the Golden State Killer. He's got so many names.
He's got too many names, and they're too cool. They should call him something lame.
Yeah. Yeah. On June 15th, 2016, the FBI released further information related to the crimes, including new composite sketches and crime details. A $50,000 reward was also announced. The initiative included a national database to support law enforcement's investigating of the crimes and to handle tips and information, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, quote, through the use of genetic genealogy searching on GED match, investigators identified distant relatives of D'Angelo, including family members directly related to his great-great-great-great-grandfather, dating back to the 1800s. Based on this information, investigators built about 25 different family trees. The tree that eventually linked D'Angelo alone contained approximately 1,000 people.
Wow.
Over the course of a few months, investigators used other clues like age, sex, and place of residence to rule out suspects populating these trees, eliminating suspects one by one until only D'Angelo remained. End quote.
Nice.
It's fascinating.
It's really cool.
Like, whenever, if you ever watch the documentary or listen to any other podcast that's like probably more detailed than this one, it's so interesting to like I said, it was just like this and this and this and this. All of these things had to like be put into place so specifically for them to find this guy.
So wild.
Yeah.
I love it.
Genealogy, DNA, like all that shit is so cool.
It's so cool. What year was this?
In 2016 was whenever they found the link by the great, 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 four greats grandfather.
Okay.
From the 1800s. And then they had to like make all these family trees.
Because I remember when this like went down.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So cool. All right. Identification of D'Angelo began in December 2017 when officials led by Detective Paul Holtz and FBI lawyer Steve Kramer uploaded the killer's DNA profile from the Ventura County Rape Kit to the personal genomics website GED Match. The website identified 10 to 20 people who had the same great-great-great-grandparents as the Golden State Killer. A team of five investigators working with genealogist Barbara Ray Venter used this list to construct a large family tree. From this tree, they established two suspects. One was ruled out by a relative's DNA test, leaving D'Angelo the main suspect. On April 18th, 2018, a DNA sample was surreptitiously collected from the door handle of D'Angelo's car. Another sample was later collected from a tissue found in D'Angelo's curbside garbage. Both were matched to samples associated with the Golden State Killer crimes.
Ooh! Got him.
Since D'Angelo's arrest, some commentators have raised concerns about the ethics of secondary use of personally identifiable information. So, like, a lot of people are like, that's fucked up that, like, you use the DNA of their family.
Uh-huh.
But, like,
in this case,
I don't see why that's fucked up.
I don't give a shit.
People are like, I have rights to, like, my privacy, but, like,
not if you go and do all that.
Yeah. Whenever you become a fucking murderer and rapist, you lose those rights to privacy.
Sorry.
And like, who cares if they know what your DNA is? Maybe you shouldn't have fucking left it in your rape victims.
Really?
So like, I'm sorry. I don't see any problem with this.
Yeah.
I don't understand the people that are arguing against it, like, at all.
They're murderers who got away, and now they're afraid that it's coming for them next.
They're like, damn it, I shouldn't have done
don't
that.
Don't do that. It's not right.
I knew I shouldn't have, like, spit all over that woman.
Really?
Or brushed my hair with her hairbrush. Dang it. So, and it's infuriating to me that people think this.
Yeah.
All right. During the investigation, several people were considered and later eliminated as suspects. So I'm just going to quickly talk about them. Okay. So there was Brett Gladsby from Goleta was considered a suspect by Santa Barbara County investigators. He was murdered in Mexico in 1982. Before the murder of Janelle Cruz, eliminating him as a suspect, which is sad.
Yeah.
He was murdered. Paul Cornfed Schneider. I don't understand. But, like, he's kind of an asshole. A high-ranking member of the Aryan Brotherhood.
Oh, gross.
Was living in Orange County when the Harringtons, Manuela Within, and Janelle Cruz were killed, but a DNA test cleared him in the 90s. But, like,
put him in prison anyway.
Cornfed. Fucking cornfed. All right. Joe Alsip, a friend and business partner to the victim, Lyman Smith. Alsip's pastor said that Alsip had confessed to him during a family counseling session. Alsop was arraigned for the Smith murders in 1982, but the charges were later dropped, and his innocence was confirmed by DNA testing in 1997.
Weird still.
Why would you confess?
I don't know. Boredom.
At a family? That's so bizarre. Like,
why don't you do the dishes? Because I killed all those people.
He was really just like cheating on his wife. And he's like, I'm a murderer. That's horrible. All right. Let's take a super quick break and then we will come right back.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
And we're back.
Hello.
All right. So, this very short section is called Other Suspected Murders. After D'Angelo was arrested, he was also suspected of committing the 1974 Visalia rape and murder of Jennifer Armour, the 1975 Exeter rape and murder of Donna Jo Richmond, and a 1978 murder of a woman and her son in Simi Valley, but was cleared as a suspect in all three murders by DNA testing. Victoria police ruled out a link between D'Angelo, who docked. This is kind of interesting. So Victoria, Australia. Police ruled out a link between D'Angelo, who docked in Australia during his Navy service, and the Melbourne serial child rapist and murderer known as Mr. Cruel.
Mr. Cruel. Sad.
Like, that's crazy to even be like, oh my god, he was here during that time. Let's investigate.
Yeah.
Like, people are so smart. But also, Mr. Cruel? I've never heard of that. That sounds so fucked up.
It really does.
Child serial rapist and murderer.
I think we should maybe not do that story.
It might be, like, too sad.
Yeah.
I haven't looked it up. We'll see. All right. The next section, finally, is the arrest and trial. On April 24th, 2018, Sacramento County Sheriff's deputies arrested D'Angelo, and he was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder. Oh, wait. Oh, my gosh. Almost. This episode comes out on April 28th.
Oh.
How cool.
And what day was this?
April
24th. Ooh.
I remember whenever this happened.
Yeah.
Like, I vividly, I was living in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking a dog. And I was listening to a podcast and like, I got like a notification on my phone about it. Cause you know, you get notifications about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then like one of the podcasts I listened to, like the following week, they were like, we have a true crime update. This in. Yeah. I was just like, this is amazing. It's like, geeking the fuck out because I was like so far into like true crime podcasts then because like I just listened to them all day long while I was walking dogs. I listened literally all day long, so I was very...
It was so exciting. I remember it. It was so cool.
It like opened up the world
yeah
to like all these things that they could do now.
And I really hope everyone who got away with a murder, I really hope they were all, like, terrified.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope they still are.
Absolutely. And they should be.
Yeah.
Those smart people, they're coming for them.
They're coming.
Yeah. Anyway. He was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances. On May 10th, the Santa Barbara County District's Attorney Office charged D'Angelo with 4 additional counts of first-degree murder. D'Angelo made a confession of sorts after his arrest that cryptically referred to an inner, this is so stupid, to an inner personality named Jerry.
Jerry.
Who had forced him to commit the wave of crimes that ended abruptly in 1986. According to Sacramento County prosecutor Christine Ho, D'Angelo said the following to himself while alone in a police interrogation room after his arrest in April. Quote, I didn't have the strength to push him out. He made me. He went with me. It was like in my head. I mean, he's part of me. I didn't want to do those things. I pushed Jerry out and had a happy life. I did all those things. I destroyed all their lives. So now I've got to pay the price.
Hell yeah, you do.
So he said that to himself, alone in a room.
So weird.
Damn it, Jerry.
Jerry, this is all your fault.
D'Angelo could not be charged with the rapes or the burglaries because of the statute of limitations had expired. But
there should be no statute of limitations on rape.
I agree.
That should be a forever thing.
Yeah, like why? Just because 7 years has passed, it's no longer painful?
It sucks.
Like, come on.
It should be like murder.
Horrible. He was charged with 13 counts of murder and 13 counts of kidnapping because he tied up his victims. Mm. D'Angelo was arraigned in Sacramento on August 23rd.
Day before my birthday.
My daughter's birthday. 2018. In November 2018, prosecutors from 6 involved counties collectively estimated that the case could cost taxpayers $20 million and last 10 years. At an April 10th, 2019 court proceeding, prosecutors announced that they would seek the death penalty, and the judge ruled that cameras could be allowed inside the courtroom during the trial. On March 4th, 2020, D'Angelo offered a plea to plead guilty if the death penalty was taken off the table, which was not accepted at the time. On June 29th, as part of a plea bargain to avoid the death penalty, D'Angelo pled guilty to 13 counts of first-degree murder in special circumstances, including murder committed during burglaries and rapes, as well as 13 counts of kidnapping. So I don't know why at first he was like, yeah, I'll plead guilty, just don't kill me. And they were like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a few months later, they were like, okay. I guess. I guess it was like a year later. But still, like, why?
Weird.
Yeah. No, it was just a few. March to June. Whatever. Anyway, on August 21st, 2020, D'Angelo received multiple consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. D'Angelo offered a brief apology after listening to days of pre-sentencing victim impact statements. Quote, I've listened to all of your statements, each one of them, and I'm truly sorry to everyone I've hurt.
Sure.
Love, Jerry. D'Angelo committed most of the offenses while he was married and raising a family. Neither his wife nor his children ever suspected he was committing serious crimes.
That's so scary.
It's horrifying to think about. Like,
Fuji could be out there murdering people and you don't even know.
I mean, he could be murdering people with a stink.
Yeah, he definitely did that. I am the victim.
His eldest daughter thought he was the perfect father. Aww. While his wife believed his reasons for being away from home. Like, he had come up with, like, oh, yeah, whatever. Go bowling. And she's like, right on. Have fun, Jerry. As of February 2021, D'Angelo is incarcerated in protective custody at California State Prison.
Boo! Let him out. And of protected custody, I mean.
Nasty old man face.
Ew. He should be in general population and he should be getting beat every day.
Yeah. He's just like so incredibly disgusting and average looking. Like, the thing about, like, serial killers and, like, all these horrible true crime stories is, like, the people committing these crimes are so average. And they have average lives. Like, this guy had a wife and kids. And, like, they're just normal people.
Scary.
It's so scary. Like, anybody could be a horrible person and anybody can be a victim. It's horrifying.
It's really scary.
I'm hoping that, like, as, you know, technology becomes even more advanced and, like, people are more afraid of DNA and stuff, like, that means people are less likely to commit horrific crimes.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
People be crazy.
Yeah. Again, my sources for these stories are Wikipedia and the award-winning TV miniseries I'll Be Gone in the Dark on HBO. And that is that.
Wow. That was, I wish I could say it was fun, but I can't. It sure was interesting.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's like such a fascinating, like, ending.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, before, because I've listened to podcasts from before he was caught.
Uh-huh.
And people are very, very passionate about, like, he's still out there. He's still alive. We're going to catch him. Like, the woman who wrote I'll Be Gone in the Dark is, she passed away. But she was extremely passionate about finding him. And unfortunately, they did not find him before she died.
Oh,
yeah, it's a very, very sad story.
That is sad.
But yeah, go watch the miniseries. I have not read the book. It's on my to read list, which is like a million books at this point. But the miniseries is very, very good. And Paul Holes is the best.
Ooh, you have a crush on him.
I unashamedly do. He's so smart. I mean, he's a Colorado man. And I love him. He's done good in the world.
Aww.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. We will see you guys in a couple days for a bonus episode. And I hope you guys had a good ass month.
Yeah.
Follow us on social media. And bye.
Bye.